Welcome to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 7. Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining me here for episode number 7. Today, I will be speaking with the author of Virtual Freedom, Chris Ducker. Chris is a traditional brick-and-mortar businessman turned internet business pro. In early 2010, Chris set a one-year goal to transform his business with the start of his blog. By late 2010, Chris not only achieved but surpassed his goals with the launch of his second company, Virtual Staff Finder. Listen in as Chris takes you on his journey from employee to brick-and-mortar businessman to virtual freedom pro. Chris, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely. I know that you had started your journey as an entrepreneur back in 2009, 2010, when you really began transforming it into an online base. But before you became an entrepreneur, what did you think the future would be like?
Uncertain, I think, is the word. I mean, you know, the thing is, I've always been very much kind of old school brick and mortar, based out of London in England, and you know, even coming over to the Philippines in 2000, I was still working for another company, and so, you know, and that carried on, you know, right through to actually 2004, which was when I started my first business. But that again was a brick and mortar business. But those, right up to 2004, my entire career, even though I only actually had three bosses,
wow.
You know, one company I was with for almost 7 years back in London, publishing firm, I wasn't the employer, or rather the employee that sort of jumped around from one job to another. That wasn't my style at all. I genuinely, even at an early age, wanted to build a career, and I knew that to do that, I was going to have to stay in one place for a certain period of time and climb that corporate ladder that we all now probably dread the idea of doing. But it was always uncertain. You know, you just don't know when you're working with somebody else. You don't know what's going on around the corner.
Right.
You don't know what's going on in the boardroom. And, you know, I went from almost losing my job a couple times to keeping it based on nothing but sheer sales history. And then, you know, eventually the publishing firm that I spoke about there for a minute, they ended up actually selling. They got acquired by a much larger firm. And I decided to, you know, take a somewhat of a golden handshake. I'm not going to say it was golden. It was more bronzy sort of type of handshake. But I took a few extra months' money and decided to leave because, you know, when you go from whatever it was, 80 employees to 600 or something within the company, you know that you're, you know, it's uncertainty is right there. So, yeah, my feeling was always what's coming next, you know, what's going on around the corner, what's happening. And it wasn't until really 2004, when I decided to start my first business, that I really understood what it was obviously going to be like to be an entrepreneur. And there's not that much less uncertainty involved in becoming an entrepreneur, but what is certain is that you're 100% in control of your destiny as a quote-unquote worker. And so, you know, I felt that if I had more control, there was more likelihood of things working out in my favor. And obviously we made the decision to jump, and that's what happened.
Awesome. You gotta love it when you do make the decision to go for it and it actually works out beautifully. So I commend you for taking that lead. But I'm now curious, of course, Chris. I knew nothing about this business back in 2004. And of course, as you mentioned, it was a brick and mortar business. So what were some of the first steps that you took once you, you know, started the business back in 2004, if you wouldn't mind elaborating a bit on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we were working with a local bank here in the Philippines. We were basically handling all of their personal loans and credit card acquisitions. And so, you know, it was a telemarketing firm ultimately, and that's my background from London. So, you know, I knew the business. I knew how to, you know, generate decent, you know, business over the phone and that sort of type of thing. So it wasn't a problem, you know, setting up, you know, the internal, the guts of the business. But what was an issue and what took me quite some time to get used to was everything behind the scenes that you don't see in business. Things like mm-hmm. contracts and agreements and lease, details and banking and P&L statements. I mean, God, I remember the first time I saw a profit and loss statement, I almost had a nosebleed. I was like, what is this? Where did all these columns and rows and numbers come from? You know, all I care about is how much money we made last month, sort of thing, you know? And so it was tough for me to get over it. And now I understand, as a business owner, now I truly understand the real power behind, you know, really delving into a P&L statement so you can see where you can save money, where you can increase profits, and that sort of type of thing. So I can't beat a good P&L statement now. Bring on the P&Ls all day long now. But back in them days, it was pretty tough for me to get my head around all that stuff. So, yeah, operationally, we were fine. But paperwork-wise, HR-wise, anything sort of important to growing a business, I struggled with to begin with, absolutely. I'll be the first to admit it. But now, you know, here we are, you know, 10, almost 11 years later, what are we looking at? So that first business I sold in 2006 at just a profit. We didn't make a lot, but just at a small profit. And the market became very saturated locally. A lot of firms sort of cropped up doing the same sort of thing as us, and it just became very hard to get the numbers we needed to turn any real profit sales-wise. Right. And so I did sell up at a small profit, and then actually I went back to work. I was working for an infomercial business based out of Miami, in Florida, mm-hmm. and I was with them for a couple of years before I decided that, yeah, this was not going to work. I was working actually for a very, very nice guy away from the office. Like, this guy was legit, like floor seats at the Heat games, VIP tickets to Prince's pre-Super Bowl show, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, once he put his work mode, you know, he switched on to work mode, he was just the most micromanaging SOB you could potentially want to work for. So I ultimately I ended up quitting in what was it, mid 2008, and that's when I set up the Live to Sell group, and here we are, you know, 6 odd years later, and we have 3 subsidiaries, almost 300 employees, and we're a multi-7-figure business. So, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, I was in that corporate world for a while. I escaped, set up my own thing. We did okay, but it wasn't amazing. Mm-hmm. And then as the husband and the father, at that point a father of two, I started to get worried about, well, okay, I've sold this business. What's the next thing? I've got a little bit of money in the bank, but what's the next thing? I'm not ready to retire. I don't have that kind of money. And I'm a provider, first and foremost. I always say that's my number one role in life. I'm a provider for my children and for my wife and myself and the people around me. And so that was where, you know, fear comes into play. And I'm not ready to do this again. I haven't got any ideas. I'm worried about whether I'm going to waste money. I know I'll do what I do best, and that's sell. And so I went back into that world for a couple of years before I decided that it truly wasn't me. That entrepreneurial chain and ball around my ankle was just pulling me back into that world. And I'm so glad that I listened to my gut and went ahead and you know, escaped one more time, because it's been the best decision of my life.
That's wonderful. No, and I think that's probably one of those recurring themes for most entrepreneurs. One of the most difficult parts is that fear, and actually finding ways to overcome that fear to actually propel yourself forward. So, you know, what do you think you found to be useful in terms of overcoming that fear?
It's a good question. I don't think there was anything really, like one particular thing, one resource or book or person or something that was useful in helping me make that leap for a second time and for a last time. I don't think there's one catalyst. I think it was just ultimately me following my gut. And, you know, at that time, you know, I was in my mid-30s. I kind of felt, you know, and I've read enough books to know, you know, everybody says, you know, you got 5 years, man. You got 5 years, and you know that's, you know, you pump it out for 5 years. And so I kept saying to myself, well, I want to do those 5 years in my 30s, not in my 50s, because in the 50s it's going to hurt. in my 30s, I can probably recover if I burn out. And I did burn out, you know what I mean? So, like, it's, I think, just following my gut was what it was about more than anything else.
Excellent. And I think for most people, that probably is what it boils down to, is really just kind of taking a look at yourself and figuring out whether or not that scenario really fits, or, you know, whether or not you should look at opposite or different paths and so forth. So, Chris, how do you feel technology helped you when you did make that transition to the online world? You know, of course, the transition to the online world is technology in and of itself, but What do you feel really helped you in terms of being able to move from a brick-and-mortar business and move into the online world?
Well, I think it was, I mean, for, you know, the reason why we, and we'd been running for a good year and a half or so before I made the decision to really focus in regards to marketing, particularly online. It became very apparent to us just by, you know, we had a website and all that sort of, you know, malarkey, but we weren't really promoting it. We weren't really doing any SEO. We weren't doing any content building. We weren't promoting our website in any way. It was just sort of up there to be found. And it was getting found. And that was the weirdest thing, because we did nothing at all to get the thing found. And it was getting found regularly on a daily basis. So we saw the increase in inquiries just go up via email over the space of sort of probably mid-2008 through to mid-2009. And at that point, I decided that, you know, well, okay, this works, right? So we need to really zero in on this and maybe not spend so much money traveling and going to conventions and, you know, networking events and all the stuff that I'd been doing, because that's how I knew how to do it. I was brick and mortar. That's how you built businesses. In the good old days, you went to networking events, you know what I mean? And so, you know, being based here in the Philippines with a major client base or a prospective client base in the United States, it was costing a lot of money flying to the U.S. 2-3 times a year and doing these events and staying around for, you know, 2-3 weeks at a time to jump from one place to another to attend these networking, you know, luncheons and dinners and all the rest of it. And we were getting business that way, don't get me wrong, but the online world was calling, and we decided to really zoom in and focus on it. And that's when we rebuilt the website. We started creating content, and then I started blogging in 2010, and that was the catalyst for everything to go up to a whole new level.
Wow. And when you say that that was the catalyst in terms of the blog itself, mm-hmm. why do you feel that the blog was the catalyst? What was it that you saw that really shifted for you? How do you feel it differed from what you were doing in terms of, you know, I know you mentioned that you weren't really marketing at all. It was kind of just out there. But as you rebuilt and as you started growing, why is it that you felt the blogging was more of the catalyst for, you know, the business versus other areas that you were working on?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, the reason why it was such a catalyst, and you know, I didn't realize it at the time. It's mm-hmm. taken me a couple of years. You know, it wasn't really until I relaunched my blog under chrisducker.com. You know, at first I was blogging at virtualbusinesslifestyle.com. And, you know, it wasn't until I made that leap and I changed things in the middle of 2012 to chrisducker.com that I realized the reason why it was working so well was because of the relationships that I was building with my audience before they turned into customers. And that's what the blog really did for me. It did a few things. First and foremost, it created a platform for me to be able to provide value to my prospective customer base, which ultimately ended up becoming my online audience, right? Number mm-hmm. two, it allowed me to answer their questions, because they would comment blog posts or send me a tweet or something like that, which ultimately was allowing me to provide even more valuable content, because now not only was I providing them content that I thought they would want to see and hear and read, but I was also now starting to produce content that they wanted more than anything else. And that really struck a major chord. But, you know, and this was almost 5 years ago. This was January 2010 I started. So it really allowed me to create a platform for me to just touch base with my customers before they were my customers, build up that relationship. And I now call that the P2P strategy, where it's people to people relationship building. And you know, you've heard of B2B and B2C and all the rest of it. This is P to P. This is where business is going now, and it's been like that for a while. We just didn't know it really. And that was the biggest thing for me. That was what really rang the bell for me in the middle of 2012, when I did make that jump to start blogging under my own name instead of a brand name. And I put myself out there more. I started podcasting. I started doing more video, started speaking more, and all the rest of it. And before I know what's happening, you know, the 2,000 or 3,000 email subscribers by the end of 2011 jump up to now where we are right now. I think there's something like 60,000 people on my blog subscriber list, on my email list. So, I mean, and it grows every day, obviously. There's 70, 80 new people being added every day. So it's insane how, I mean, it's not insane. Actually, that's not the right word. It's what it really does is it allows me to validate all the hard work and energy and effort that I put in personally into creating the content for the audience, because I see them very clearly turning into customers. Not because I'm forcing them, not because I'm bending their arm behind their back and, you know, sort of hard selling them, because I don't do that at all. It really comes down to me building relationships and then providing the solutions to their problems. And that's what I do, and that's what people want.
Exactly. No, definitely. When you are able to provide the type of value that you tend to provide, Chris, because I absolutely love the blog. I love the book, Virtual Freedom, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, Virtual Freedom was an absolutely wonderful book. You really do a great job of breaking down for anyone who's looking to begin delegating to others. You know, you really break it down and do a good job. And it is definitely assisted with the hiring of our very first assistant on this end. So we thank you.
Good job.
We are getting there.
Love that.
You know, delegating is not an easy task, but it's something that, you know, when you begin breaking into it, to have the guidance and have the assistance that you provide is astronomical and it's untouchable. So thank you, Chris.
That's very cool. Thank you very much. I'm glad that it's made such a big difference in the way that you're building your business as well. And that was the reason why I wrote the book, was genuinely to help people like yourself that are in that position of growth. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to do it all on your own. And nowadays, you know, you don't need to do it all on your own. You shouldn't be even attempting to do it all on your own. And I'm glad you've taken the leap and hired your first VA. That's great.
We're on it. We're trying.
Nice. There you go.
So thank you.
Next time I speak, I'll give you a nice solid high five and congratulations.
Excellent. Hopefully that'll be a tropical think tank. We shall see. We're working on
there
it right
go.
Now.
So yeah.
Well, there we go.
We still have a few slots left. I think we're at around sort of 10 or so slots left for next year. So you still got a little bit of time to get in if that's what you want to do. It would be a pleasure to have you.
We are definitely trying. I've been in touch with her, so we shall see what we can work out.
And nice.
But definitely. So what would you go ahead and caution as one of the biggest mistakes for entrepreneurs? You know, one of those things that people kind of get caught up in when they first begin. What would you caution people against?
Probably just believing your own hype, I think. You know, I mean, for me, when I first started out, I genuinely thought that, you know, everything was going to be rosy. And, you know, I'd been around enough successful business owners to know what I needed to do. And, you know, I kind of almost believed that I wouldn't have to work as hard as a lot of those people had. I remember I was at a dinner. I don't think I've ever told this story on a podcast interview before. So, and I've done a lot of them. So this is an exclusive for you right here. I was at a dinner here in Cebu with, it was myself and my wife and two other couples at one of these couples' house. And they lived in one of the most exclusive private subdivisions here in Cebu. Very expensive properties. And, you know, this guy's a very, very successful entrepreneur in his own right. And so I'm sitting there. This was probably, God, maybe 10 years ago, I think. I'm sitting there and I say to him, Tom, what do I need to do to have what you've got? Very simple question. What do I need to do to have what you've got, to get to where you are? And this guy, at the time, was probably in his late 50s. And, you know, here I am in my early 30s, right? This cocky kid from England asking this successful American business owner who's lived in the Philippines 20 years, you know, what I need to do to get to where he is. And he turned around and he said to me, "It's really easy, Chris. It's really, really easy. People think that it's tough to become a successful entrepreneur, but it's not. It's really easy. You know what you got to do? What? You just got to work 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for 5 years. That's all you got to do." And I was like, that doesn't sound easy to me. What do you mean? No vacations? No. And he said, "Well, obviously he was being a bit sarcastic about the whole thing, but you know, and this guy's a multimillionaire several times over, and you know, so I said to him, okay, well, say I don't want to do the 15 hours a day for 5 years, you know, what else can I do?" And he said, "Well, you know, you're lucky. You know, you kids nowadays, you're lucky because you have pretty much everything you need to be able to help run, support, and grow a business at your fingertips." Is that the rest of it is the tough part. It's the manpower. It's the managing of clients if you're going to go into a service-related environment, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And that conversation, actually, you know, there were six of us at the table, but I really zoned in on Tom that evening, and it was a life-changing dinner for me because I gleaned all of that, you know, all of that conversation that night. From Tom, and I haven't really forgotten much of it. And he was right, you know. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't do the 5 years. I hit my goals. I set my own personal, you know, business size goals, monetary goals, and everything. I set them when we started the business in 2008, and you know, I hit them by 2010. So I did what I needed to do in just over 2 years. But I want to state, I also did burn out horribly. To the point where one morning in late 2009, I couldn't get out of bed, like my body had given up on me. To the point where we're talking hospital time, antidepressants, time off work, the whole kit and caboodle. And that was where my journey of virtual freedom really began, because that was where we decided that I needed to start running my business again instead of having my business run me. And that was very clear that had happened. My business started running me instead. So, you know, 2010 was the year, and, you know, you've read the book, you know the story, so I won't bore you with it again. Anybody else listening in, you just have to buy the book to find out, wouldn't you? You know, but no, ultimately, you know, that was really what I would have changed is, number one, not believing my own hype that it would be easy and that it would, you know, be a simple thing to do in terms of starting a business and growing a business. And the second thing that I would have done differently, I would have got way more active much, much sooner online than we actually did. It took us, you know, it took us a couple of years really to understand the power that the internet gives us entrepreneurs in terms of growth. Mm-hmm. And that would certainly be the other thing that I would do. I would have started much earlier online.
Excellent. Chris, thank you. Thank you for all of the information that you have shared with everyone this afternoon. I will be sure to go ahead and throw a link in the show notes page to the book Virtual Freedom. So before we wrap it up, I do have one last question for you. As mentioned earlier, the show is designed to really help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for new innovative companies and help solve the pain in an industry that they may not have initially thought of before. Mm-hmm. So Chris, of course, we want to help you. If you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business, what would it be and why?
That's a really good question. I would say, if I had a magic wand, okay, I would say probably, God, that's a good question. You've got me stumped a little bit. Hang on. I'm going to get there. Don't worry, because there's always problems, right? I'm just trying to think of, I've got plenty of problems. I'm just trying to think of what one I want taken care of first. All right, so there's a tech-related problem, And then there's probably just a real life related problem. Real life related problem. And I mean, apparently, according to Richard Branson, this is going to be happening in the next 20 years or something. So that's cool. Thanks, Sir Richard, if you're listening in by any chance, which you're probably not, because you're usually, you know, way more important than anybody else to listen to podcasts. But
especially one that just started like 2 months
hey,
ago.
Don't put yourself down. Come on, Laurie. He's, you know, I'm going to email him. He won't reply, but I will. I'll email him with a link to the show, so he has to listen in now.
You're so awesome.
I mean, the first thing is really like a real life problem, and that is time. You know, I always say that time is our most valuable commodity. Being based here in the Philippines is great, don't get me wrong, but it also limits what I can do and where I can be a lot. Particularly as a lot of my business, you know, 52% of my web traffic every month is from the United States. Big market for me. Big market, followed closely by the UK and then Australia and then Europe and everywhere else. But, you know, I mean, I get to the US a couple times a year, but when I'm there, you know, I usually have to squeeze a lot in within a 2 to 3 week period, maybe no more than, you know, like a month. And let me tell you, by the time those trips are up, I'm spent. Like, I put a lot into those trips. I try and squeeze as much as I possibly can into them. I mean, we met when I was in New York for the Virtual Freedom book event, right? And, you know, that was the tail end of a six-week trip where I just hit it hard. I think I did like 9 speaking engagements in 6 weeks in 4 different cities, and I did book signings, and it was an insane trip. So the first thing I would change would be to be able to get to the U.S. faster and more regularly. I mean, apparently, Richard Branson, with all joking on one side, says, you know, it might not happen in his lifetime, but it will certainly happen in his son's lifetime, who I believe is probably in his late 20s or something by now, where he believes that we'll be able to go from the United States to Australia, which is basically, you know, the same distance between the U.S. and the Philippines, in like 45 minutes.
Wow.
At some point in the next 20 to 30 years. Now, that's scary to think that you would be traveling that fast, but it's also incredibly exciting from a business perspective. I mean, imagine what you can do from a business perspective to be able to go from one side of the globe to another in less than an hour. Huge potential from business, right? The other thing is tech. That is my biggest goal as an entrepreneur, is to be able to run my entire business from my iPad mini. That is, and I'm not joking, that is my 100% goal for my business, is to run my business from my iPad mini. I don't want to have a desktop, and I'm looking right now at a beautiful 27-inch iMac. I love it to bits, but I don't want to have a desktop. I don't want to have a laptop. I don't want anything. When I travel, I just want to bring my iPad mini with me. And the thing that stops me from doing that right now, and I have made a few trips, short trips, where all I've brought with me is my iPad mini. But the thing that really stunts me from doing that right now is two things. First and foremost, usually when I travel, I'm speaking as well. I'm going to an event to speak. And I just, even though it's possible, I'm not to the point of trusting the tech side of things yet to be able to present from my iPad. I just don't feel comfortable with it yet. There's something about having a laptop with a wireless, you know, receiver in there for my clicker and all the rest of it. And I'm sure that will change in the next couple of years. But right now, I need that the MacBook Air with me whenever I travel, because I present almost all the time. The other thing is that, you know, I'm a big believer of doing what you do best and delegating the rest. So in my business, all I really do now day to day is create content and help put strategies in place to market that content to build my businesses. That will change a little bit next year. As we talked about before we hit the record button here, I'll be launching my Mastermind membership in the second quarter next year. So there'll be another, you know, sort of focus business-wise for me. I can't wait to do that. But right now, all I do really is create content for the business and obviously manage my own email. It's hard to do that. Yes, I can sign in the WordPress and type up blog posts and things like that. But doing things like you know, uploading videos and you know, connecting, you know, just downloading stuff and all that sort of stuff, it's tough on the iPad still. And I, you know, as much as I would like to think that the folks at Apple would eventually get around to making all that stuff possible, I think we all know it's not going to happen anytime soon, because it means that we would just end up buying one thing from them instead of two or three things from them. And I love Apple, but I hate them at the same time for that fact, because they're a business and they get it, obviously. And we all get it as well. And it drives me insane, because that's ultimately all I want to do. That guy, Tom, that I told you about a minute ago, that's how he runs his businesses now. He actually runs his business from his iPad. But that being said, he doesn't do any content creation. He doesn't do any speaking. So all he really needs to do is manage his own email. And I mean, the guy's in his, you know, mid to late 60s now, even though he doesn't look like it. So I mean, he only ends up probably working an hour or two each day maximum, I would have thought. You know, he's got big businesses, big teams of people and everything. So I don't think I'm quite there yet, but that is the ultimate goal. So if you've got the magic wand, wave it in the direction of Apple and tell them to sort their lives out so we can just do what we want to do on our iPads. That'd be great.
I am all over it.
I'm sure you are.
Yeah. All over it. Oh, Chris, you've been absolutely wonderful. I thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
It's just over on the blog, you know, chrisducker.com, or if they're into tweets, they can hop over to Twitter, and I'm at Chris Ducker on Twitter.
Awesome. Chris, I thank you. Thank you again.
Thanks, Laurie. It was fun.
And thank you, the Technology Equality community, for joining me here for another episode. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I was absolutely cracking up when he mentioned the iPad Mini. I've been dreaming of that day since I was watching Star Trek with my dad. Literally, so I'm on it. I will be in touch with Apple as soon as possible, Chris. And to you, the techie community, I hope you guys really took a couple of nuggets out of that. You know, get started as soon as possible. If you have ever thought about starting a business, or if you've ever thought about moving your brick-and-mortar business to an online web-based format, get started. Stop thinking about it. Just get started. Don't forget to reach out to Chris at his website, chrisducker.com. You can always find both Chris as well as his book, Virtual Freedom, on our website on our new domain at technologyequality.com/Chris Ducker. Thank you again for joining me, everyone, and until our next episode, where we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.